Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of how bad things could get for Mitt Romney as the slow drip about his tenure at Bain Capital, how much money he made, what taxes he paid, and how much of his wealth has been hidden continues. Jacob Halbrun, the senior editor at The National Interest, joins us to discuss this, as well as news that Romney's biggest super PAC donor, Sheldon Adelson, might be in big trouble. Then we'll look into the jobs and job creator narrative that has been, and presumably will be again, a central issue in this year's presidential campaign. The editor-in-chief of the Washington Monthly magazine, Paul Glastris, joins us to discuss how the lack of jobs did not create the great recession that has wiped out 40% of the average family's wealth, and that the campaign should be about how the middle class can get out from under ruinous debt and rebuild its wealth. Then finally, we will look into the firing of the head of North Korea's military and some of the recent surreal happenings in the Hermit Kingdom with Soo-mi Terry, the former Deputy National Intelligence Officer for East Asia at the National Intelligence Council and the Director of Japan, Korea, and Oceanic Affairs on the National Security Council. She joins us to discuss miniskirts, Mickey Mouse, and the mysterious woman accompanying the boy emperor. Joining us now is Jacob Halbrun, who is senior editor at the National Interest and the author of They Knew They Were Right, The Rise of the Neocons. Previously, he was an editorial writer for the Los Angeles Times, a senior editor at the New Republic, and a Japan Society fellow. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jacob Halbrun.
Thanks, Ian.
And Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is in Israel talking with senior leaders, and of course she represents an administration that the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu is pretty much effectively at war with. There is no secret that Netanyahu is a very close friend of Mitt Romney's and has been for a long time, going back to their early days when they graduated from MIT and Harvard Business School, respectively. So I imagine there's discussions going on now have got to be a little surreal, haven't they?
Absolutely. And another thing that's come out is that when Mitt Romney was head of the U.S. Olympics Committee, he also outsourced the Olympic uniforms to Burma. I wouldn't call it a drip, but rather a flood of revelations about Romney's business dealings. And my strong suspicion is that this is just the beginning, and that the pressure will increase as well for Romney to release his tax records, which become more interesting each day he refuses to release them.
Well, I'd like to talk further about that, but I just wanted to get a sense of the Romney foreign policy, in as much as what I find extraordinary about, and since you wrote the book, They Knew They Were Right, The Rise of the Neocons, and we know that Romney's almost entire foreign policy team are the neocons, and that I think in many ways Netanyahu's playing a far bigger role in the Romney campaign than is really recognized. But just to begin with, I find it extraordinary that a man could be running for president of the United States and literally have no apparent interest in foreign policy. He's been running for at least 10 years. He's not educated himself about the world and about foreign policy issues. And he simply believes that as CEO of America or CEO of USA Incorporated, he can simply outsource foreign policy to the neocons and outsource it to his Middle East policy to Benjamin Netanyahu.
It's true. And the other day he just had a fundraising dinner at Dick Cheney's house, talked about what a great man he is. The silver lining would be that since Romney doesn't appear to believe in anything except his own personal advancement, that he has simply taken the neocons on board and wouldn't listen to them once he's president. But given what occurred during the Bush presidency, I don't think it can be taken lightly that many of his advisors are, in fact, neoconservatives. And Romney has not only been belligerent on the question of Israel, but also declared that Russia was our number one geopolitical foe when he's not attacking China. So my guess is the Romney presidency probably would represent a wholesale reversion to the Bush policies and could well include a military strike on Iran.
And do you take seriously these reports that Condoleezza Rice is being considered as a vice president? We know that she wowed all of the big Republican donors at a recent retreat that Romney organized and the campaign organized in a ski resort in Utah. But, you know, her record is probably one of the most disastrous records of both a U.S. national security advisor and a secretary of state. If you really look at her record, she's got tremendous PR and apparently in Republican circles, she's highly regarded. But the record is quite to the contrary.
I agree. I think she would be a disastrous choice because it would make Obama's task all that much easier to portray Romney as simply Bush 2 or 3, that it would represent a return to the Bush era, both in domestic and in foreign policy. And I'd be amazed if Romney made that bold a choice and that reckless a choice. It seems to me he's more likely to pick someone like Portman from Ohio, a state that he needs desperately to win.
Well, that's a safe but extremely boring choice, as is Pawlenty.
Can't pick someone who would overshadow him, Romney.
Right. Well, that's I was about to say. That's why Chris Christie can't be the choice, right? Because he'll just make the second fiddle, make the number one man. He'll upstage him constantly, right?
Yeah, I mean, Christie is a true demagogue and an effective one, but also someone who has the ability to wade into a crowd, which Romney conspicuously lacks. And I think that's a good way of putting it, as you were earlier, that he outsources everything. And in a way, I think he views the presidency as something that he can sort of capture as a takeover artist in the way he did in business, and that the American people can be lulled into complacency, and that he would outsource much of the presidency, which is what George W. Bush did as well.
Well, I think what he's implying here is that I'm the management type and I'm going to manage America. And I would think that Obama could easily make the argument, and I don't know why he doesn't, that America needs a leader and we don't need a manager. The problems are so manifest that they're beyond management. We need, a bold leadership.
Yeah, I think, but that would require Obama to come up with his own plan, which he is not.
Sure.
So far, the campaign on both sides has been purely negative. But just tell me why Barack Obama is running to win re-election other than to stop the GOP from returning to power. What has he put forward? I really don't see the plan or even the visionary statement.
No, and in fact, there was I was speaking the other day to Amitai Etzioni, who said that, told me that there was a focus group of independent voters that CNN had organized, and they were all asked, what is the Republican narrative and the talking points? And everybody in the room could repeat verbatim what the Republicans have been saying on the stump. And then they said, what's the Democratic narrative? And there was this deathly silence.
Yeah, we don't know. And in that sense, Romney's critique of Obama is, of course, grossly exaggerated, but it is true that Obama has been a fairly passive and circumspect president over the past 4 years. I'm not saying that there haven't been, the health care was a major accomplishment, but again, that was one of those things where he pulled it out of the perils of Pauline at the last minute. We don't really see a coherent vision of how Obama would restore the American economy and what he would actually do.
Well, again, I'm speaking with Jacob Harburn, who is a senior fellow at, sorry, senior editor at the National Interest and the author of They Knew They Were Right, The Rise of the Neocons. And previously, he was an editorial writer for the Los Angeles Times, a senior editor at the New Republic, and a Japan Society fellow. So back to Romney's problems and the extent to which he's in a bind, largely of his own making, I think, where he either lied to the American people about his tenure at Bain and Capital when it ended, or he lied to the SEC. You think that drip, drip, drip is going to turn into a flood?
I do. And I think Romney would have been better off, obviously, addressing all of this during the primary season. And he should have said that he should have figured out some way, instead of these lawyerly evasions about his time at Bain, he would have had to say, yes, some outsourcing took place, but in the end, we ended up creating more jobs. Instead, he's running away from another one of his accomplishments, such as it is. The Bain Capital is his calling. It's supposed to be his calling card, and Obama has flipped that on him. Now he's desperately trying to defend his years at Bain and avoid any responsibility for many of the things that happened there. I think this could potentially be devastating for Romney.
And I imagine that the fact that he only released the 2010 returns is an indication that they were the least incriminating, and he doesn't want to go back like his father did. And Bill Clinton the other day mentioned that every president for the last 30 years has released decades worth of tax returns. John McCain released 20 years worth of tax returns. I'd imagine the years that are now in question about whether he was at the helm of Bain Capital, 1999 to 2002, those tax returns might well be incriminating.
Yeah, I suspect that it's so bad that, as George Will said, he's willing, the lesser hit is to be bludgeoned as he is being for not releasing them. The contrast with his father, again and again, is extremely striking because his father was progressive Republican, man of principle, who actually toured American ghettos and visited Appalachia as a candidate for the Republican nomination in 1968. Romney, the son, represents a repudiation of pretty much everything that his father stood for.
Well, is that though because of
George W. Bush did the took the opposite stances as his own father, but in Romney's case, it's just as extreme, if not even more.
So, but in both cases of the sons, distancing themselves or doing the opposite of what their fathers did, George W. Bush and H.W. Bush and Romney Jr. and Romney Sr., is that, though, to say how much the Republican Party has changed?
It's true, because I don't think that if you look at, unless you think that Romney was lying as governor of Massachusetts, which you can't discount, but he did come up with the version of Obama's health care plan, and his record was never that of a rabid conservative. And the Republican Party seems to have obviously drifted so far to the right that, there's this obviously this difficult dance between Romney and the far right. In the party. He's a candidate that I suspect some in the party would be just as happy to see lose in 2012 so that they can run a real firebrand in 2016 like Rick Santorum.
Well, just in the last couple of minutes, let's turn Jacob Harburn to Sheldon Adelson, the biggest donor to Super PACs supporting Mitt Romney, although we don't really know about the 501c4 super PACs and who's donating to them. And we know that, you know, corporate America is certainly putting money in there without any attribution. But Adelson apparently, and you've got to go back to again to the Netanyahu connection. Adelson, of course, has devoted his fortune to Netanyahu. He publishes a newspaper in Israel that's given away free. It's the biggest newspaper now in Israel devoted to Netanyahu. I believe that Netanyahu's been playing a role in the Romney campaign from the beginning, and there's no accident that Adelson first gave his money to Newt Gingrich to split the anti-Romney vote, which Gingrich did. And now we have reports coming out, I believe Frontline, PBS Frontline is doing an investigation into how much Adelson's in trouble. You know, Adelson, all the big super PAC donors, Adelson, the Koch brothers, and Simmons are all alumni, as it turns out, of Michael Milken, as is Romney himself. But in Adelson's case, these casinos in Macau apparently involved him. At least the suspicion is that he broke the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act and could get nailed for it.
Yes, well, anyone operating in Macau, that would be like trying to play a football game without getting your uniform dirty. My suspicion is that, it seems pretty clear that Adelson will come under a lot of scrutiny. But the more, you know, we'll see what the investigation turns up. But what you're pointing at is the destructive influence that a number of elderly and wealthy American Jews have had on Israel and the relationship with America. And that's something that Peter Beinart talks about in his book, The Crisis of Zionism, that these elderly Jews have essentially practiced a form of checkbook Judaism, and that they have encouraged settlement growth in Israel, and that they poisoned the relationship between the Obama administration and Israel by demonizing Obama and thwarting the peace process.
Well, Jacob, I'm afraid we've run out of time here, but I thank you for joining us. And
thanks, Ian.
We should follow this further, I think, as more evidence emerges.
Absolutely.
Again, I've been speaking with Jacob Halbrun, who is a senior editor at the National Interest and the author of They Knew They Were Right, The Rise of the Neocons. Previously, he was an editorial writer for the Los Angeles Times, a senior editor at the New Republic, and a Japan Society fellow. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with the editor-in-chief of the Washington Monthly magazine.
That's my money, man, down on his knees. He ain't praying, but a damn sure ought to be. He said a place where money doesn't grow. Prison, but it's doing more than shooting.